Listening to Travel with Rick Steves, by now you know that each region of Italy has its own culinary specialties. In southern Italy, Naples is the city where pizza was invented, and it's home to a lot of the Italian food that's become popular around the world. To help us know what delicacies to look for in Naples and the region of Campania, we're joined now by local tour guides Alfredo Vitale from Naples and Mariana Iramano comes to us from Avellino, where they grow hazelnuts and raise the buffalo whose milk is turned into mozzarella. Alfredo and Mariana, buongiorno.
Buongiorno.
Thank you, buongiorno.
So when we think of Italy, we think of Italian cuisine, but how does it vary from region to region, Mariana?
To be honest, all the stereotypes about Italian cuisine, they're mostly from Naples, because when you think about Italy, you think about pizza. And well, margherita comes from Naples. It was made there for the first time. And the pasta, we have a beautiful pasta called Gragnano pasta that is made over there.
Plus, Americans have this image of Italy, but a lot of it is shaped by which Italians came to the United States. Alfredo, when an American thinks of Italian cuisine, how would the immigration shape our perception?
Yeah, actually, the immigration wave was mostly from the southern part of the country, which was the poorest part of the country. Those people were the ones that brought their cuisine tradition with them. And this is what we find also in the imaginary of American people coming to Italy. They think to Italian food, thinking to what they have in their
so
Italian.
So they go to Milano thinking, oh, I'm going to get what I think
exactly.
About it. But it's probably the cuisine
exactly.
of Naples.
Mostly, yeah. And also even some of the recipes you find in America from the South are kind of recipes that you don't find in the South anymore. Let's say, for example, spaghetti meatball.
Yeah. Spaghetti meatball, that for the typical American would be the quintessential Italian dish.
But
it came from the South and it's not even cooked there anymore.
No.
All right. Mariana, when a Roman or somebody from Milano goes to Naples, what do they think? What do they want to eat?
I believe mostly fish, because we live on a seashore and we like to prepare many of primi piatti with fish. They're very popular all around Italy. Hmm. For example, spaghetti with vongole.
Okay, so primi piatti would be the first course, generally a pasta with some kind of a topping. And
yes.
That would be a fish topping.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Mussels. Mm-hmm. In Pepata di Cozza is very famous too. There's the mussels, peppered mussels.
Okay.
And the linguine with scampi.
So these are all pastas with fresh seafood.
Yes, it is.
And then they would have a secondi, a main dish,
mm-hmm.
that might not be seafood?
No, it can be even what is very typical of Naples, salsicce friarielli.
What is that?
It's sausages with, let's say, broccoli, but it's a very special variety that you can only find on around Monte Vesuvius area.
Okay, now this reminds me of an interesting thing. So you find this Mount Vesuvius. So a good eater, Alfredo, will want to eat local style and with the season.
Exactly.
What does that mean for Naples? What would be local and what would be seasonal?
This means a lot for Naples, and this means a lot also in everyday life in Napoli, because we have amazing markets and fresh food. So you have to think that most of the Neapolitan people, they don't go to supermarkets. They only go for like goods that you find there, not related necessarily
I
to food.
I love the markets of Napoli. They're so alive.
They're alive, they're colorful, they're rich in color, in voices.
It's a sensuous experience, all of your senses.
Totally. It goes from the view
your nose,
to the palate.
Your ears,
and
your eyes.
It's amazing. It's just amazing. And also the relationship that you can entertain in a Napolitan market are just wonderful.
The relationship?
Yeah. You start, just touching one of the products, and the person there will say, oh, why don't you try this one too? Look, this is better. Oh, you want a little bite? Oh, this is so fun to try it together. Why don't you fry these? These are fresher. Oh, if you need to boil dough, you have to use these ones, not these ones. And it goes on, can go on forever.
So these merchants care. They don't just want to make the sale.
Totally.
They want you to make sure to know what to cook.
Totally.
And how.
And not only the traditional markets. Nowadays, we have more and more farmers market also in Napoli,
uh-huh.
which used to be not so common. And now they're getting on a weekly basis, different parts of the town. If you are from Napoli, you know where to go. Every day, there is a different area where the farmers will come.
Getting off the cruise ship in Napoli,
yeah.
If you turn right and you go halfway to the train station, there's a wonderful market by a gate.
Oh, yeah, that's Porta Nolana.
Porta Nolana.
Yes.
Oh.
If you go there on the 23rd of December, that's really a quintessential experience of a market.
Why?
Because people are getting ready to cook for Christmas Eve, and that's where they go to shop for fish, which is the important base of Christmas Eve menu, and vegetables.
Don't you eat an eel on Christmas?
Yes, some people still do. This is one of the old traditions,
right,
which are kind of getting a little bit, because not everybody likes eel.
Right.
Well, actually, the name in Neapolitan is capitone.
Capitone.
And you do it fried, deep fried.
So, Mariana, if you and your mother are walking through this market, what's the name of the market again?
Nolana.
Nolana. What is the interaction with the people? What would your mother be excited about?
We usually go out and we have lunch there, because by the time that you are over with the market, you have been trying everything, you're full, and lunch is done for free.
So nothing but little samples,
yes,
talking with people, learning
fresh
and
tomatoes
buying your vegetables.
And, yes.
Fantastic. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Mariana Germano and Alfredo Vitale. We're talking about Naples and the cuisine of Naples. Our phone number is 877-333-7425. Elinda's calling in from Deerfield Beach in Florida. Elinda, are you thinking about eating in Naples?
Oh, yes. You're making me very hungry listening to all that wonderful food. And I had a lovely food myself in Naples. I didn't go to the market, but one of the places I went to was Michele's for pizza. Now, it was my understanding, but I could be wrong, that that's where pizza was invented. And we had pizza, the margarita pizza. They only have two kinds, but it had like the colors of the Italian flag with the green basil, the red tomatoes, and the white mozzarella. I still wish I could be right back there eating it.
And it's so simple. It's so fundamental. It's just a good pizza. And this pizzeria is famous. It's La Antica Pizzeria da Michele. Mariana, when you are having that margarita pizza that Elinda's talking about, she was describing the colors. What's the history of that pizza?
Well, it was made for the first time when the Queen Margherita was visiting Naples. It was at the end of the 1800s, and there was a chef, Raffaele Esposito. He didn't know what to make special, so he decided to use very simple ingredients, making on the top the Italian flag. There was the red of the tomato, the white of the mozzarella, and the green of the basil.
So to this day, you see the red, white,
and
green, the Italian,
yes,
flag, and the pizza named after the queen, Margherita.
Yes, Margherita.
By the way, there's a lot of great pizzerias. This is the touristy one, and there's a long line there, and
exactly,
it's very historic, and it's
exactly
good, but you don't need to wait in line for an hour to get a good pizza.
No.
All along Via Tribunale, you've got wonderful pizzerias.
Oh, yeah.
And in a classic pizzeria like Michele, they have two kinds of pizza,
yes,
margherita, and what is the other one?
Marinara.
And what is marinara?
Marinara is really basic. It's just tomato sauce, olive oil, some oregano, and somebody asks to have some anchovies. And it was very simple, very also poor, because the name marinara comes from the people that used to be fishermen.
Okay,
so
the mariners.
Marinai, uh-huh, mariners. And the wives would bring this pizza to them when they would come back from the sea.
Okay.
So it was really, you know, poor.
Maybe a few anchovies on it.
Yeah, that's
right.
Why the anchovies probably come,
nice,
where the anchovies come from also.
There is something so basic and beautiful about that pizza, though. And a lot of Americans think the more toppings, the better.
Exactly.
But I think Italians would think differently.
They do think differently. And they do think also that some toppings are not allowed.
Elinda, does that resonate with you, the pizza experience?
Absolutely, and it was just wonderful, and I can't wait to get back there. And then I also had a wonderful dessert that I was told I had to have in Naples, and I don't remember the place where I went. I know I was walking from Michele's towards the train station, and Sfogliatella, something, I'm not pronouncing,
oh, yeah,
it properly.
Oh, yeah, Sfogliatella.
Mm.
Elinda, that's going to bridge us right into sweets, and it's dessert time. Thanks for your call, Elinda.
Thank you. Bye.
So Elinda is talking about sfogliatella, and that's a classic sort of Neapolitan sweet.
Yes, it is.
Mariana, what exactly is that?
It's with ricotta cheese and dried fruit inside, and very crunchy and crispy the outside.
Hmm. And why is it so popular?
Because it's so good.
Alfredo, what is your favorite Neapolitan dessert? If you're going to take somebody out in something very classic Neapolitan.
Ooh. There are a few, and also desserts in Napoli are seasonal, like the other things.
Oh, yeah.
So you can get sfogliatella and babà, actually you get those all year round. And when you get closer to Easter time, you get the pastiera, which is an amazing cake, which is filled with ricotta, with wheat, and it's very, very
nice. What is the name of that?
Pastiera.
Pastiera. Yeah, is there a Christmas cake also?
No, that's Easter cake.
Easter cake.
And it's really very good. Now, actually, you find it all year round in every pastry shop in Napoli. But the tradition was for Easter. And then when you get closer to Christmas, there are a lot of very typical desserts like the struffoli, which is...
Struffoli.
Yeah, struffoli is like very simple. It's deep-fried dough, small balls with a lot of honey and beautiful little candies on the top. And that's a very, very, very typical Neapolitan.
Sort of a festival.
It is. And it's also a good connection to the little Arabic influence that we have in Napoli, because it's a good connection also with the Sicilian desserts, which are very close to the Arabic tradition. But this one in Napoli, the struffoli, is the closest to the Arabic tradition, actually.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We've been talking with Mariana Germano and Alfredo Vitali about a Neapolitan cuisine, the beautiful food from Naples and that region. And Mariana, you've got a very tempting plate of what looks like high-calorie treats from Naples right here. You've brought it to our studio. Can I have a little bit of this?
Yeah, sure.
So
have it a try.
What is this first one? It looks like a hard, sort of flattened donut.
That is called rococo.
Rococo. It feels like I want to dip this into something.
Of course, you should. That's why I brought some limoncello, too.
Oh, you can dip it
yes.
in the limoncello. Yeah. So there's lots of different biscotti in Italy, mm-hmm. and to dip it is part of the fun. It extends the dining experience in a lovely way. And what am I tasting here?
It's mostly almonds in there.
Mm. So this is like a dippable almond biscuit. And the name of that again is?
It's rococo.
Rococo. And for the second course of my dessert, I see a beautiful chocolate cake here. It's a small chocolate cake, and it's a little more fragrant. What exactly am I eating here?
That is called mostaccioli.
Mostaccioli.
Yes. And
it's more than chocolate. What is in this? As I eat it, describe the ingredients that I'm tasting.
So you have cinnamon and lemon, honey, and of course, dark chocolate.
Oh, yeah. Now, that is a beautiful marriage of flavors.
Yes, it is. And it makes it special. We usually have them on Christmas time.
Mm. Do I have to wait till Christmas?
You should, because you don't find them around.
Mm. I love it. This is an example of centuries and centuries of wonderful love of food, experimentation, and creating a tradition that we can eat.
Yes, it is.
Do you like to eat?
Oh, I love to eat.
Was your mother a cook?
She was. She was.
What did she cook?
She was a cook in a school, and she left when she had the third child. Mm-hmm. She used to make eggplant parmigiana.
Mm. Do you make eggplant parmigiana?
Of course I do. Yeah, it's my specialty because I put love in it. It takes time. Mm-hmm. It doesn't look like, but he has a long making process.
So Alfredo, if you eat some eggplant parmigiano, can you tell if there's love in it?
Oh, actually you do.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's possible because it's really, actually, as she said, it's not an easy cooking thing. It's a long process. And also it is important to do with good timing and using fresh products. Mm-hmm. And you can recognize people that do it because just they have to do it, or they do it because they love to do it. That's one of the typical traditional ones. And actually, Neapolitan people are going back a lot to tradition. Mm. In the cuisine.
Well, right now I'm eating some Neapolitan tradition. And
you
I'll
are.
Tell you.
That's a Christmas tradition.
Delizioso. Alfredo Vitali, Mariana Germano, buon appetito and grazie.
Mille grazie. A presto.
Vino in the glasses, pasta on the platters. People that you love, that's all that really matters. Now it's time to take a precious moment out to pray. Buon Natale, molto bello Christmas Day.
We'll hear what you've enjoyed about traveling abroad at Christmas time in just a minute. But first, let's call on an old friend to tell us about the Christmas traditions on the west coast of Ireland. For many years, Tim Cullens and his wife ran a B&B in Dingle. He now joins his son Michael to offer van tours of local archaeological sites at ancientdingle.com. Tim, thanks for joining us.
Not at all. You're quite welcome. You wish, I think, to speak maybe on the Christmas festivities in Dingle?
Well, Tim, tell me, what's Christmas like in the west of Ireland?
Christmas is a very big occasion in Ireland generally, but moreover in the west of Ireland. It's very much and has been a family occasion. People in olden times, of course, used to return maybe from England when we had a lot of immigration. They'd come from America, they'd make off to be at home for Christmas.
So that's quite a party there in the villages, isn't it?
Yes, indeed. And they'd prepare maybe a week ahead of the big day. The housewives would be preparing food. They'd be making plum puddings, Christmas cakes. They'd be getting in some turkey, some ham, a bottle or two of whiskey.
So the big feast is the big feast on Christmas Day or Christmas Eve?
Christmas Day is the big one.
Okay.
And on that day, they would prepare dinner and they'd all sit around and they would stay inside that day, maybe say having a bit of a party, playing cards and so forth. No one dare go out on Christmas Day. So one day the streets are deserted in Dingle is on Christmas Day.
Everybody's at home with the family eating.
Yes, eating and a little drop of whiskey maybe, drop of Guinness, maybe some wine now is creeping in. Wine is getting pretty popular in recent years. And the ladies would have maybe a drop of port or a drop of sherry.
Oh, so the port and the sherry is the ladies' drink.
Yes, indeed, yes.
Okay.
And they'd also have Christmas crackers where they would pull these across the table, you know, where there would be Christmas fare and hats and jokes and these out of these Christmas
so the kids
crackers,
would,
as they call
them. Little firecrackers, small firecrackers.
That type of thing, yes.
Yeah,
yes. So
okay.
It's very much a fun thing, and the meal could run maybe for 2 or 3 hours. No one's in a great hurry. Everyone is relaxed.
Tim, what happens on Christmas Eve? Is there a big feast on Christmas Eve also?
Christmas Eve is more or less is leading up to the big one. Normally in Ireland, they used to eat fish on that particular day. They had a fish called ling, L-I-N-G. It was a type of a cod, salted, very strong, strongly salted fish. And they would cook that with some potatoes and some sauce. And that was more or less a lead-in to Christmas.
I gotcha.
There'd be holly and ivy put up on all the windows. Lights would be put up. Christmas tree would be put up. They'd also put up the crib, honouring the birth of Christ on the Christmas Day. That would be put up by the children, would gather around, they'd make their own cribs with the figures, and that would be put up in the central part of the house and lit up.
Okay, so the kids build a Christmas crib, a manger scene.
A manger scene, exactly, yes.
Tell me about the local Santa Claus. Do you have Santa Claus just like we have? Who brings the gifts for the children?
Yes, Santa Claus is a big deal here. As a matter of fact, I'll let you in a little secret. I am acting as Santa Claus in the local hotel here over the Christmas.
Say it ain't so.
So I'll be wearing a different hat.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fun.
Santa Claus brings the gifts at Christmas, and the idea is that all go to bed early and leave some gifts for Santa Claus in the hearth.
In the hearth. So Santa Claus does come down the chimney.
Down
just
the
like.
Chimney, and they would maybe leave out a little glass of Guinness there for him.
A glass of
and
Guinness.
And they might leave out a few carrots and a turnip for the reindeers.
So we give milk and cookies, but Santa gets Guinness in Ireland.
Guinness in Ireland for strength, you see. And then the following morning, when the kids would come down, the first thing they'd look for is the carrot. And no doubt there'd be marks on the carrot indicating where the reindeer would have nibbled.
Okay. The Guinness
and
would
the Guinness
be long
gone. Was gone, of course, disappeared.
All
proof
right.
Positive that he had come and gone.
Tim Cullins from the west coast of Ireland, thank you very much, and Merry Christmas to you and all your family.
And the same to you and yours. Slán, bye-bye.
Bye.
Cheerio.
Let's hear about your Christmas time travels next at 877-333-RICK on Travel with Rick Steves.